It is the duty of leaders to lead, of the creative to create, of the daring to do. The free world expects leadership of us. Its fate and our fate depends upon our leadership. We are industrious, inventive, restless, with the fires that burn within us. Well, I say that nothing is easy, and the best things are the hardest. And all our troubles, all our immense difficulties, now and in the future, can I say, be solved if we have the will, the courage.
For those of you who are considering an afternoon coffee, you're in luck because our next speaker is like a shot of energy in the arm. No coffee necessary. We're really excited to have Jonathan Bush coming up, especially to have Athena Health's support. Actually, a year ago at JP Morgan, Steve and Unity were at the Athena Health party at JP Morgan, and Jonathan said, next year we've got to do something together. And here we are. They are an outstanding sponsor of the festival. I'm sure you all know Jonathan Bush, but quick introduction. He's arguably one of the most successful entrepreneurs in digital health, has grown Athena to be a massive force, over 40,000 providers as customers, generating over $400 million a year in revenue, experiencing major growth. And we have Stephanie Lee from BuzzFeed, one of the most active writers in digital health, chatting with Jonathan. So welcome you both to the stage, and thanks for being here.
Hi, everybody. Good afternoon. Thanks for being here. It's cool to have you here because I think we can all agree that digital health has become more and more part of the conversation at JPM. Certainly, there's been a ton of new startups entering the space. And you've got a unique perspective since you've been in the digital health industry for almost a decade now with Athena Health. So kind of going back to...
I love you, but it's 2 decades, actually.
Well...
Because I started when I was 12.
Fair point. I guess initially with Athena Health, it was a network of maternity clinics, right?
So that's right. Athena Women's Health and The Birthplace. That was our logo.
So I think maybe a lot of people in this room have experienced or been in a situation where plan A isn't working out and they got to pivot to plan B. So how did you make that decision?
The lack of any oxygen whatsoever in the business helped a lot with the thinking. We had like 123 employees and $611 in the bank. We had already gone from like weekly payroll to biweekly to get an extra week, you know. So it was running a little tight. And the primary reason was that as we grew, we basically grew broke. You know, we grew revenue defined as a service rendered, and we got more women to want to have births in our with our midwives and our funky new age with San Diego. Everybody's wearing Birkenstocks. It was great. But we couldn't get the claims paid. And the key to the business model wasn't just the claims. It was that we were going to get paid for the savings created by our alternative approach. There were 45% fewer C-sections amongst our clients when patients came to us when the same patient didn't. There was 35% fewer neonatal intensive care unit days. But we couldn't submit a claim for a day in the NICU that didn't happen in 1997. You still can't today, even though it's like the policy of the land. And that fact that we just couldn't actually administrate our business model, which never occurred to us when we were writing it, you know, caused us to sort of gravitate downward into more essential activities. And we literally ended up, it was sort of humiliating, this grandiose idea of birth centers and midwives and you know, we had our own birth facility. It was very romantic. And we ended up being a billing service because it was the only thing that we could actually reliably execute. And we found that lots of doctors actually just couldn't figure this shit out. And then we said, okay, what we'll do is it was like MacArthur. You know, we were kicked off the beach, total failure, but we'll be back. And we'll be back and we'll enable 100 entrepreneurial ventures to manage episodes. And today there are actually, amongst the 10,000 medical groups, there are 20 that are venture-backed companies that are expect to profit by managing, a little like the Dean Ornish talk, profit by managing the entire experience of care, which is the best part about Athena, is that it's starting to happen.
So I guess, how have you seen the digital health industry change since then, over time?
I think it changed from not being a thing at all to being a little fragile thing. So that's huge. Existence is big. And I think the idea that there's a term for it, that there's a parlance in it, that there's capital in it. I mean, we started our More Disruption Please, our little marketplace to sell allied digital health companies into our client base in 2011. We had like no APIs, and the total venture capital dollars into all digital health in the United States was $891 million, according to VentureWire, which is less than was spent on valet tips in the Bay Area. I mean, and it's a $2 trillion back in, 2011 market, and no money going, and no venture capital. We got as high last year as $4.3 billion, and probably a lot of it is in the coffers of the people in this room. Go, girl. But that's still kind of light. So what we need to do is support startup health, and we need to support startups. Our big idea is to basically eliminate the cost of marketing, sales, and implementation. So if you're selling something to a medical group or a hospital that we serve, we will do your marketing, sale, and implementation for you. We'll clip the ticket. You know, we'll charge you like the app store. But we got to get that cost out because it's too big and it takes too long. And that makes you raise too much money and have to charge too much per success, which makes too many of these things die too early or run out of gas. So that's our sort of big idea, is to try to get rid of sales and implementations to allow people to go in hard and fast with a few million dollars, build a great product, sell a bunch of it, and then either launch another product or sell that company and make a great return and do the next.
I guess specifically the EHR market, like Epic is still epically big. So have you seen that market change over time?
I've seen Epic evolve tremendously over the years. It used to be written in mumps. Used to be they would sell a license and you'd buy servers and it would take years to set up and it would cost hundreds of millions of dollars. And now, I mean, it's written in mumps. And no, there has been a big inflection at Epic, actually. So they built Care Everywhere. And so it is possible. We have successfully gotten through, we believe. It's not live yet, but we think we'll be able to access every Epic hospital that has Care Everywhere and pull a CCD, a continuity of care document. So that changes the game dramatically for us. Obviously, the way it should go is that you don't just be able to sort of dump a chart out, but you should be able to interact with the chart, which is what we're trying to do with More Disruption, Please. And I think over time, Epic has had a couple of tough goes of it, losing the Department of Defense contract and other things related to their interoperability, and they are changing their tune, are much more... They're a great company with a great culture and great engineers, and they're just now realizing that in order to prosper in this next chapter, they're going to need to be more permeable to entrepreneurs. Hopefully they won't, and then all of the entrepreneurs will only build great products for Athena clients, but you never know.
We'll see, right? Yeah. Looking back again, so you guys went public in 2007, and you'd raised about $41 million in venture capital at that point. So I know a lot of folks here are in the early stages of their own digital health startup or they're investing in them. What advice do you have for folks thinking about whether to go public, when they should do it, what factors should they keep in mind versus selling and exiting
well,
that
it's
way?
It's both advice and aspiration. The advice we give at the big MDP retreats on sales and marketing is when you say, oh, I've got a meeting with Cedars-Sinai, fucking run away. Like, or partners or Mass General. The big deal is a bad idea. What you need is a lot of little deals, and you need it for a couple of reasons. One, they've got endless overhead. They can meet with you forever until you are dead. And each meeting, like, this is it. We've agreed to have a meeting to discuss a memorandum of understanding, which we will use to create a proposal. You know, but the chief of cardiology really wants a special widget on the side, and we have to build that so that we can get to the MOU. And you end up just getting led down this habit trail of death, and you never get the deal. Or you do get the deal, and you end up building basically custom functionality for one institution that no one else can use without being rebuilt again. You know, we're trying to build scale here, and these institutions are not oriented towards your repeated scale. So what you want to do is find the group that's deciding between death and dishonor and serve them. You're the dishonor, right? They can't afford the real thing, so they're going to use your piece of shit. And they're going to use it your way. And then as you then can be a little more in charge. You can be the dad a little bit, you know? You can iterate down your own product path. You get, it gives you a keel in the water to be more product-centric. Whereas if you, you know, if you have the customer that you just can't lose, that's just so big, and once we get that, we're going to be able to raise money. No. You got to get lots of small customers that obey and listen and then learn from their exhaust, not from their orders. Yeah, that's my big, that's the most important. I know it's tempting when you get the big meeting and you know the guy who has the guy and one of your investors is on the board of whatever. Screw it. Stay away. And what we're trying to do is literally most of the MDP focus, we're trying to get at really small practices. Like, we'll sell to 1,000 five doc and fewer groups, you know, as our goal for the first year in GA with an innovative new startup health type product so that we can get more product centricity and mojo into the entrepreneur. The entrepreneur can spend time inventing and distributing, not selling and servicing and begging and you know, mincing.
Maybe the flip side of that is Athena's made some acquisitions of its own over the years. I read off a few. Hippocrates, a mobile medical reference app, and Razor Insights, a cloud-based system for rural hospitals, basically. So how did you make the decision to acquire others' products instead of building your own thing?
We call it acqui-hire. So if somebody's built, let's say someone in this room, has built, let's say, something that's amazingly good for dealing with documenting on an ambulance. Jonathan, saw you a minute ago, right? Like, we might get to that someday, like ambulance, you know, but probably not. And if some guy's already done a great job with just that over, and it's like, we want to get into the ambulance space, we want to do billing, we've got a lot of infrastructure on AthenaNet, we might say, hey, rather than start from scratch and do the prototype year and then the beta year and, you know, 4 or 5 years later, we've got a nice little nest of customers that have learned to trust us. What if we could buy those 4 years from somebody, take the stuff that we've already got, you know, that's really strong fiber, that is enhancement to that, like the national network. I mean, there's 76, there are more patients on AthenaNet already than there are in the entire NHS of the UK. So there's a lot that we can bring. We're connected to every insurance company. We're connected to half the hospitals. That stuff we could add to and then use the IP and the learning and the management team of this new group. And we've done that with almost every product. So Athena Communicator came from an acqui-hire and was run by the original entrepreneur for years. Our population health service was, you know, he had 12 hospitals or 15 hospitals that he did a kick-ass job with, and now he runs ours. You know, we have 15% of the at-risk lives in the country. We didn't start from scratch. We started from all the learning of him and his brother's 5 years as a startup in a little incubator, frankly, in the Boston area. Right. So that's what we like to do. We're bigger and dumber and slower, and to go and be crazy alone and iterate without, you know, in a big company, it risks getting deprioritize when great $100, $200, $500 million products are asking for another resource. Whereas an entrepreneur, you can buy it and start right in at a sizable revenue.
Yeah. So speaking of entrepreneurs, and outside of just straight acquiring or acqui-hiring, a big priority for you has been creating a community of entrepreneurs in digital health and supporting them and giving them resources with more disruption, please. Maybe you can describe what it is and your philosophy behind it.
It's the sort of the name for our marketplace. You can join it just for fun to go to our parties and get benefit. We do one big meeting in our facility up in Maine. We have cabins and we play stupid reindeer games in the woods with alcohol. And do kind of teach in. Then we do one in Washington where we break up into groups of 10 and meet senators and congressmen to which we have access and we share that. And then we're doing one here with Startup Health. We've got Bill Draper, who was the first sort of IT venture capitalist in Silicon Valley in the 60s. And then we'll have 1,000 venture capitalists in the room. So there's that level. Then there's actually building a product. We've got a, you know, developer portal, and you can build. We're building over time. All of AthenaNet will be accessible through nice, restful web services that people can write to, and then we sell those services that are built in through our marketplace. So our account managers learn to talk about it. We do video clips with the CEO and demos, so that we can, as people need the service that a given marketplace company has, we can surface it, pitch it, and flip it on in the workflow of Athena, kind of asynchronous to the company, and get leads more like the shopping network than an enterprise sales company. So those are the levels. We also offer seats. So we've got San Francisco, Austin, and Boston. You can, you know, like a WeWork, you can live in our office. And if you want to interact with our account managers and developers, and we have capital if you need it.
And what do you want to see when they're applying to this? Like, what do you want to see entrepreneurs working on or focusing on that you're not
already? Funny you should ask. I asked you to ask, and you did. Thank you. So we've got actually an innovation challenge ending on April 15th. I think it's April 15th. It's in April, but get to work. That's focusing on the areas that we think is the greatest sucking sound. There's a huge vacuum, lack of like zero entrepreneurial energy in all of the modalities around acute care, post-physician care. So there are no apps or services for nurses, for hospital dietary, for pathology or lab. All of the activities that happen in the hospital could be converted into a national service that picks up that activity across hospitals, nursing homes, multiple geographies. Most of the hospitals in the country are subscale, will not buy a new piece of enterprise software, cannot afford it anymore, are desperate for a web service of some kind to replace their need to put in a PACS system or a dietary management system or a nurse rounding system or a blah, blah, blah. And we are selling those hospitals, and so we will bring you in. We sold 33 hospitals. This is how desperate they are in the fourth quarter alone. There's a huge demand amongst smaller hospitals for cloud-based services. So that's our area that I think is like the number one most unhunted woods in digital health.
Okay, good to know. I guess while we're still talking about advice for entrepreneurs, I wanted to know what's one of the biggest mistakes you've made along the way, and lessons you've learned.
You want it like alphabetical, chronological? I mean, the big mistakes are always... So we make a lot of sort of whatever the side of your brain that you're thinking is mistakes all the time, but it's not that big a deal. It doesn't even count as a mistake. It's widely accepted to be learning. But I think the failings is when you start as an entrepreneur, you attract people by conning them into believing in you, and you know that you're lying a little. Or your insecure side, your dark side, is like, you're a liar, you're nobody, you're ruining their life. You know, these stock options are toilet paper. And then as you grow, you feel this great loyalty and bond, and it's been very hard for me to confront people who don't fit the new, whose role and self and the company's needs don't quite match. That's a big... can't even say it, but I get conflict avoidant, and conflict avoidance is terrible for businesses. Conflict is essential, getting that shit into the room. So that's been my biggest failing, is not just getting it said. It was a great strength in the beginning because it's the Apple Dumpling Gang. We have who we have. We're the Bad News Bears. It's like, if the kids don't show up, there's no team. So the drunk has to show up. The fat kid has to show up. Without them, there's no team. There's no company. And then at some point, you know, you got to tell the drunk to sober up and get the fat kid on a treadmill or get him out.
I have to admit, I lost track of the metaphor, but.
I did too, but my mouth kept going, so.
This is a question from Twitter. I asked people in the world what they wanted me to ask you. And
it's great. There's still people on Twitter. That's awesome.
Crazy, right? One question was where you see digital health by 2020.
So if we get this integration thing, like the big deal for us was in 2015, major hospital IT companies that were basically clear that they will never connect to us in any way for the rest of their life, over their dead body will we connect, et cetera, are like climbing all over themselves to connect. If we consume that well, figure out a business model, you know, technology gets cheaper, maybe we just store it all, download it all, and just... like Google Photos, you know, just keep it for the hell of it. If we can get the whole continuum of care connected, which could literally happen in the next 3 or 5 years, all of medicine could turn on its head. So right now, medicine is organized largely geographically, right? It's like a hospital, and then whatever happens in the hospital. And people go to it. But problems aren't like that, right? We're getting more and more specialized in medicine. So really, to be a rheumatologist, you need patients from all... to get enough volume of any one thing, you need more than one hospital's worth of volume, and you don't really need the hospital. So in 20 years, digital health could actually reorient medicine around problems and away from geography. And I expect the people in this room to actually be the ones that do that. And it won't be us. We'll be like the plumber. You know, we'll be the network. You know, we'll be the cable company, and the shows will be the thing that the doctors use. And those will be, there'll be a show just for rheumatologists and another show just for, type 3 breast cancer oncologists. And those businesses will go much deeper than providing blank fields for doctors to type shit into, right? They'll connect into APIs and Athena and Epic, if it's still alive, and any of the other players. But what they'll primarily do is provide an intense service that connects medicine around lots of people that are around a certain problem. And I think we're literally, it's about 20 years, but we're now starting. So it took us 20 to get to here, 18, 17. I think now the person who orients that way, like Flatiron's kind of doing that. Not kind of, they're absolutely totally doing that. XG is trying that with rheumatology. Those guys, the people who do the nurse idea and the pharmacist idea and all the ones I just rattled off for the innovation challenge, those will be the companies that we talk about and that see and that are getting the multiples and that are the stars. And the Athenas will be kind of utility, boring, hopefully useful still, Amex or something.
All right, I think it's a good note to end on. Thanks so much.
Thank you guys for having me, and don't give up.